Welcome to the Iowa Blog. I'm your host, Craig Wynn. This will be part 14 of Dode's Song. This, as I have shared with you all the way through the process, is the single most important declaration in the universe. And that says a lot. I mean, obviously, Yahweh inspired Moshe to transcribe the book of Bereshit in the Torah, and then Moshe lived the experience of Exodus as Shemot. He certainly lived all of the details and experience. Of course, much of what was said also, though, in the book of Korah, Leviticus, is Yahweh explaining these are the things that are going to happen and what they mean, but also Moshe lived through that as well. And the experiences and the prophecies explained in Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, who would have thought that we would have found such treasures here? The last three chapters of the Torah that I've translated are all from Numbers. Numbers 19 of the Adama Parah, Numbers 5 on the redemption of the adulterous woman. And then for our show last week, and we'll return to this material also on Family Hour this week, the great meltdown and kick in the tush of Numbers 12. And so all of this is something that Moshe experienced. And when you move to Devarim, it's actually Moshe's words. I mean, obviously he's inspired by God, but he's inspired by God very much the same way I am when I bring these programs to you. And you say, well, wait a minute, hey, he's a prophet. It's got to be different. No, not really all that different. A little different, but not all that different. If you listen to Moshe's presentations throughout Devarim, what he is doing is saying, Yahweh explained these things to us, and I want to remind you of what God said, filtered through my words and your experience, so that his message resonates within you, so that you come to better understand the points he was trying to make. That is really the essence of Devarim, called Deuteronomy, words. And so all of these things were exceedingly important, as were all of the prophetic revelations from that point on. And that all said, when you get right down to it, and you want to say, what should I consider? What is the single most important thing for me to read, and most importantly, to understand, if I want to appreciate what God is offering, what he expects in return, what he really despises, what causes him to look at us and be just disgusted, what causes him to smile in a loving embrace? How did God go about making it possible for us to be part of his covenant family? It is these things, and with whom he worked to achieve these things, and then through whom he is working to convey them to you, that is the essence of the 89th Psalm. And so if we're looking to be part of the covenant family, if we're looking to benefit from the Moed Mikre, if we want to know through whom Yahweh has chosen to work and convey his message and have a genuine understanding of it, the place to turn to the lyrics that Yahweh wrote in Dode's Song, the 89th Mizmor, this great tribute that he wrote to his son as the cornerstone of the home for his name in exactly year 3000 Yah, 968 BCE, precisely 1,000 years before Dode, as the Passover lamb in Jerusalem, in this very same place, would fulfill these promises. And exactly 3,000 years before Dode would return as king on Kippurim. That puts this song in the very center of Yah's agenda for his people. There is nothing I could share with you. There's nothing God could offer you more important than knowing and appreciating the merits of this song. Now, excuse me, as we have worked our way through this process, you'll note, I'm sure you already know, I have spent as much time, in fact, I have spent far more time sharing with you what this means to you, how to best appreciate the nature of the words that Yahweh scribed so that you can capitalize upon them and apply them to your life. I've spent more time on the explanation than I actually have on the translations. Now, there are a lot of people now from what we call the hive that are out there trying to condemn me, little stingers everywhere, and they've got their own little talking points. And their big talking point is that my translations are really good, but my interpretations, my commentary, and the insights that I have delivered, well, they're a waste of time. In fact, they're counterproductive. Just ignore them. The fact is, without those interpretations, without those insights, they would not only know nothing about who God is and what he's offering, but nor would anyone else. You see, well, I had to be diligent and go to the oldest extant sources and using Chokmah to be very skillful and disciplined to render Yahweh's testimony more accurately than it has ever been presented previously. And then I had to think about everything I had just written so that we could process it and understand it. The text that I'm translating has been available for how long, do you suppose? Well, Moshe wrote the Torah between, you know, sometime around 1447, 1448 BCE. He completed it 40 years thereafter. And so we're looking at 3,400 or more years ago. And in all of that time, all of it, no one understood what the covenant was all about, how to participate in it, that there were five conditions for participating, and they were part of the narration of what Yahweh said and did with Abraham and Sarah. No one knew that there were five benefits of the covenant. No one knew that those benefits were delivered through the Mikra, because no one understood the Mikra. They were clueless as to what each of those special times with Yahweh represent. And of course, it wasn't until a few years ago that I began to announce that the one who fulfilled Pesach, Matzah, and Makkudim is Tov David. He was the Passover lamb. He took our guilt with his nefesh on Matzah and deposited it in Sheol so that we could follow him as firstborn children of Yahweh on Makkudim. No one knew these things. No one understood what the fourth day of creation represented. No one understood that 6 24-hour days and 14 billion years are the same amount of time. There's so much of what was shared has been, the text has been there. Jews have, even in their native language, although they wrote the Talmud in Aramaic, and that's become their native language along with all variations of dialects today. The fact of the matter is, it's been available to read. There are probably 1,000 translations of it. So another translation, while more accurate and complete, wasn't the answer. It was the approach. By Yahweh choosing someone to offer his seven spirits, one of them happens to be Chokmah, the skill to be diligently discerning, the skill to understand. By Yahweh offering his children to bring life to the fallen stump that is Yisrael, these insights, by diligently translating, coming to understand all of the words and sharing how those words relate to the big picture that Yah was drawing. This is the thing that has changed everything. Everything. We've gone for 3,400 years in the case of the Torah and 3,000 years since the time of this Mizmor Psalm without a single person on the planet understanding it. There would not have been a single soul to capitalize on the Shavuah harvest or the Teruah harvest or the red heifer or Dode's return on Yom Kippurim. Not a soul. The reason that there will be a joyous homecoming is because of the insights that are parts of these presentations. The very thing that the hive bees are so insistent be discredited. Why? Because, well, they don't have any. Why? Because I've written 36 books and they have none. Why? Because Yahweh established a relationship with me to bring this to your attention and they don't have one. This is why it is so essential that you come to know Yahweh's name, that you come to know his son and what they accomplished together, that you come to appreciate the story Yahweh is telling in this Mizmor and why it means so much to us. You know, we've reached the part of the Mizmor, as I've told you previously, that Yahweh is incensed with his people. And he's incensed with his people because he gave them, through his son, the greatest gift ever offered. Eternal life, perfection, adoption into his family, inheritance, all that he has to give, our enrichment, our empowerment. He gave it all to his people, and his people spit in his face. They denied his son. They foisted counterfeits, two of them. And so this portion of the Mizmor is all about that. Now, something I will speak of this evening, and I want to make you all very clear in this regard. I have long associated Shavuah with Dod, and I have recognized for a very long time, we're talking about, in the case of both of these things, probably 20 of the 23 years I've been at this, I have recognized that what I am contributing pertains to Teruah. And there is this myth flying around now by Goyim claiming that Shavuah is their harvest and that they don't need the sacrifice of the red heifer. They don't need that Teruah thing. They're already going to be gone. No, they're not. You know why? Because Shavuah is all about Dod. That's correct. Without Dod fulfilling Pesach, opening the door to life for us, without Dod taking our guilt and taking it to Sheol on Matzah to perfect us, without Dod signing our adoption papers by returning to his father on Bukurim, which, by the way, they want to credit the set-apart spirit as if she were spiritual mommy, as opposed to just an aspect of Yahweh's nature. Without that, there is no Shavuah harvest. The third Zeruah, who is cultivating the seeds for a productive harvest, he's simply one out there in the field with the hoe, you know, pulling up the weeds of heresy. He's the one making sure those seeds are properly watered. He's the one who will serve as a tour guide saying, there it is. Come on. Let's do this together. But it is his explanation of what happened on Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim that enables people to participate. But guess what you can't do? If you're a Goor, a foreigner, I'm the ultimate Goor because I'm the Nakar, which is the observant foreigner that Yahweh calls out by title and name so often throughout his testimony. If you're a Goor, guess what you can't do? You can't participate in Passover unless you are sojourning with and living with, guess whom? Israel. Apart from Israel, it ain't your harvest. You can't participate because you can't participate in Pesach. You know who also claimed the Shavuot harvest as their harvest? Peter and Paul. Christianity. And they did the same thing. They misappropriated a prophecy, and they said, this is all about how the Holy Spirit came upon us and gave the birth of our church on Pentecost, which is Shavuot, misrepresented. Yeah, they claimed it. Just as the numbskulls from the hive are making this same claim. But it isn't your harvest. Unless you are with Yisrael, unless your prime objective is to be part of, to uplift, to uphold, to embrace Yisrael, you aren't invited. Sorry, but you ought to have thought this all through before you drew your lines in the sand. Now, they do this, of course, and we'll talk about more about this tonight. They do this because when I studied very, very diligently, more diligently than ever before, Yeshaya 17, I came to recognize that the true harvest is just for Israelites. It's a gleaning of olives. And so they don't like that one because guess what? They're not Jews. So you say, that one's not ours. Shavuot is ours. No, it isn't. I'm conducting it based upon what Dud has done, and you aren't going to be part of it. And you don't qualify for Teruah. And while they want to demean the sacrifice of the red heifer, while they say, I don't spend enough time in the Torah, even though that whole prophecy is presented in the Torah and its purpose is explained in the Torah, and they even want to isolate Elia, but he's coming back to be master of ceremonies of what he did 2 millennia 888 years previously. The sacrifice of the red heifer, Adam HaPerah, I lay down my life for Yisrael, to prepare Yisrael for Yahweh's homecoming, his reconciliation with Yisrael and Yehudim. That is Yahweh's priority. That is my priority. My priorities are Yahweh's priority. It doesn't make any sense for me to have a priority that is different than Yahweh's priority. They don't get it. In their rhetoric, the one thing they never talk about is Yisrael or Yehudim because, well, Shavuot's their harvest. What do they care? This is a very important reality for you to come to appreciate and understand. So Yahweh very miffed at those who have misappropriated his testimony, who have claimed things that are just ludicrous, and who have not emphasized the importance of what he has achieved through his co-worker, Hamasiach, Dod the second, and the greatest of the three Zoroah. So the question is posed, for how long, Adma, until when, will the eternal witness and the restoring testimony of Yahweh, will you remain hidden, concealed, and virtually unknown? I'm going to turn to the second part of this in a moment. I know the answer. The answer is that Yahweh was concealed. No one knew his name. No one was pronouncing his name correctly. There are a bunch of numbskulls out there all over the world taking variations of Yahweh's name as Black Hebrew Yisraelites, as the Hebrew roots movement, and all sorts of Christian Jewish derivations of buffoonery. I'm not sure buffoonery is a word either, but since dolphinry was, and we tried that out and I found out, okay, that is actually a word. I'm going to try it too. Sue me if you don't like my vocabulary. The fact is that for the first time, Yahweh's name was reintroduced to his people when we began this mission. For the first time, the conditions and the benefits of the covenant were intelligently and accurately presented. For the first time, there was an understanding of the meaning of each of the Moed Mikre, as well as a timeline as to when all of this took place and will transpire. The eternal witness to the restoring testimony, the Ad, began 23 years ago on Teruah in 2001, and it has developed to this point. Now, since Yahweh is miffed, and there are three things that disturb him probably more than anything else, I'm going to give you a list of things that really irritate God. One of them is when his name is for naught, as has happened in Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. You negate his name, it is unforgivable. That's why we began with Yahweh's name. Number two, he despises religion. And there are three religions who have fooled people into believing they're true because they've taken little nibbles here and there, little parts here and there from his Torah and prophets and Psalms, mispresented it, errantly rendered it, and then made dunderhead conclusions regarding it because they don't understand it and because they have an agenda. He really hates that. He despises Judaism, Christianity, and Islam with a passion because that is how they are based. The basis of the hive as well. God despises it. Another thing he hates is when you negate the importance of his son. And guess what? His son is a Yehud. And guess what? His son not only united Yisrael, not only defended Yisrael, but it is through his son, Dod, that he enabled the covenant promises through the Moed Mikre. And we've just explained how you go about participating in that. So when he says, how long are you going to remain hidden and concealed from your own people? The veil began to be lifted up and carried away in 2001. And where did Yahweh ask me to begin? Islam. Why? Because Muslims are gunning for his people. Because Islam is a plague of death that exists to annihilate Jews. It was essential that we understand and communicate precisely what it was that was causing his people to be hunted and exterminated by this demonic religion. And he says, I want you to start there. Because once you understand who Allah really is, you know the adversary. You know the whole mindset of religion and how Satan has to target Jews to have any chance of success. He asked me to start there. Guess what? I did. And then when they attacked again so viciously and they replicated the attack on Israel on 10/7/23, an exact replication. Okay, they were riding motor scooters instead of camels. I get it. Okay, they used knives in this case too, but they were using swords instead of AK-47s. Those are implements. They're irrelevant to the mindset. The mindset of what occurred with the rapes, the tortures, the beheadings, the mutilations, the plundering, the abducting, and the mass murder of Jews by Muslims on 10/7 of 23 is exactly what Muhammad did to the Jews of Arabia over and over again. And guess what? The only person who knows exactly how that happened and can now document it. You're listening to it because Yahweh asked me to go back and to write the most comprehensive condemnation of Islam ever. It's irrefutable. I now stand as the buffer to protect his people from the onslaught that is coming because the next war against Jews is being lodged by Muslims. They need to know the truth. I went back into the swamp on Yahweh's instructions to create the most comprehensive presentation of that ever. And I ended in the final and fifth volume by presenting what it was that they corrupted. So that once you come to understand who God is not, who inspired this terrible death cult of Islam, you would know the truth. And then I did something no one else has done in human history. And you don't like the fact that I'm saying I have done it. Well, Yahweh chose a person that he wanted this stuff done. The next thing we did is that we obliterated Christianity. The original questioning Paul, now in the five volumes of Twistianity, is absolutely irrefutable. Why? Because what I did at Yahweh's inspiration and insistence is something no one has ever done before. I juxtaposed the Christian claims in Paul's letters and in the so-called Gospels that were written after Paul's letters. What did they claim and what God actually said? No one has ever done that before. And so I have irrefutable proof that the most grievous of all lies, which was the counterfeit Messiah, the counterfeit Son of God, this mythological misnomer, Jesus, that isn't any better if you give him a name like Yeshua. It's still a lie. It's a counterfeit. That he never existed. He was a figment of Paul's imagination that then was weaved into the Gospels. And this counterfeit is what hid the truth. So when we read this passage from Yahweh that he inspired here in the 89th Mizmor, you need to know this is what he's talking about. That because of Paul piling religious rubbish and foolology right on top of the truth, no one saw it. No one recognized that it was Dode, even though there were 1,000 affirmations of it. The text had always been there. My translations had even been there early on, and yet no one saw it. And if you don't see through the rubbish, you can't capitalize on the truth. You can't understand the truth until you understand and appreciate how this rubbish has been laid on top of who Dode is and what he accomplished with Yahweh. This is why Twistianity exists. This is why I took so much time to go back and write it. And when it's asked, how long will the restoring witness, Yahweh, cause you to be hidden and remain concealed and virtually unknown? The answer to that question gradually began to be unveiled 23 years ago, back in almost 24 years ago now, back in 2001 in the fall of that year. And piece by piece, translation by translation, thought by thought, we piece the whole story together. We know how it all fits together. And once the last pieces of that puzzle were put together, and for the first time we understood the entire picture. We had made all the changes and updates to all of the books on the shelf. And I started to write, coming home for Yahweh. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. another book isn't going to make any difference. In fact, it may even be counterproductive. You've done the job. And you know what? Something that was really interesting, because I completed this job essentially a year and a half before the Shavuot harvest. What that means is those 35 books on the shelf, I've written 36, I think it's 35 on the, or 34 on the shelf right now, and I've written 36, have marginal utility. And the very fact there's so many of them, they're actually intimidating. And the reason they have marginal utility is that if you were to be so devoted to them that you dedicated 3 hours every evening, 7 days a week to reading those books, it would take you a full year just to get through them. And even then, there are many of those books you have to read 2 and 3 times before you appreciate the message that's being conveyed through them. So I came to realize, as there was this threat to bring down the Yad Ha'Yah site and to trash these books, that it really didn't matter. The reason is, I am these books. And that it took all of this time for all of the pieces to fall together, that the entire story was a cohesive whole. And I could look you in the eye and bring this truth to your homes, that the books that I have endeavored to write and translate and contemplate and offer thousands of unheralded insights are all there. Well, they were a gift to you. Their primary purpose was to prepare me for what we're doing right now. That is why we're here. I am the books. I am the understanding. I am the beneficiary of Yahweh's seven Ruach. And I'm able to look you in the eye and tell you that the answer to the question is now. For how long, Yahweh? This was written 3,000 years ago, minus 8.5 years. For how long, Yahweh, will you remain hidden, concealed, and virtually unknown? God was hidden and concealed and virtually unknown until we began this collaborative effort together. Our primary purpose has been to make Yahweh known. And to make Yahweh known, that's a big story, because you got to know who he isn't. And until you clear away the rubbish of Christianity and of Islam and of Judaism, which I have done through goddamn religion, through Twistianity and through Babel, 13 volumes between all of those. Until you clear away that rubbish, those who are reading these translations and considering the insights have no hope of understanding them. They're going to do some really stupid things until they are really free of it. And very, very few people have taken the time, even who have benefited from my translations and insights, to read those other books and not just read them, come to understand the horrible nature of religion and what it has done to conceal Yahweh and make him unknown. Yahweh has been concealed and unknown by religion, the very things that claim to speak for him. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam have played the greatest roles in human history to make Yahweh unknown, to hide him and conceal him. And if you are just going to be a dunderhead here, and you're going to say, wait a minute, well, they speak about God, how can it be that God was virtually unknown? When I started this, there wasn't a single person on the planet that knew the proper pronunciation of Yahweh's name. There wasn't a single person on the planet that understood the conditions or the benefits of the covenant. There wasn't a single person on the planet that understood what Yahweh was achieving through his Moed Mikre. There wasn't a single person on the planet that knew the role Dode played as it's being revealed in this song to fulfill them. There wasn't a single person on the planet that knew that God hated religion. And so God was hidden because these things weren't known. He is no longer hidden. I am making him known to you. That is my job. He was concealed behind a mountain of religious trash. And that religious trash is still prevalent, which is why I had to write the five volumes of goddamn religion, the five volumes of Twistianity, the three volumes of Babel. And that's why I spend time on these other social media sites exposing and condemning this putrid alliance today, this such deadly and immoral alliance between progressive liberals and Islam. It is why I spend so much time standing up for Israel. If you don't stand with Israel, you do not stand with God. God was not a passive party to having been hidden by religious trash. The conclusion of 89:46 reads, "Your righteous indignation, your overt displeasure, your furious antagonism is kindled and it burns imminently and prominently like a fire." Religious Jews, rabbis, the founders of the Christian religion, and all those who have promoted it, Muhammad and his demon-possessed jihadists, have kindled Yahweh's righteous indignation. His overt displeasure and his furious antagonism, it burns prominently like a fire. You ever wonder why Yahweh appeared to his people? His two forms, as a pillar cloud in the day and as a fire column of fire at night. He was disgusted by them. He had to obscure his presence in the cloud because they weren't prepared to see him. And they had to show, he had to show his righteous indignation, how it was kindled like a fire in their presence. And this has not changed. And until you understand that you have to walk away from, disassociate from progressive politics, right-wing conspiratorial nonsense, patriotism, militarism, Islam, Judaism, Christianity, socialism, big government, if you will. If you don't walk away from those things, you are not going to be part of the covenant family. And while you walk away from those things, it's essential that you not walk away from Israel. Which means the only way you can accomplish this is to bring them with you. The last time the majority of Israelites knew Yahweh was for a very brief period of time, 3,000 years ago, under Dodd's initial reign as king. And since that time, and until quite recently, 23 years ago, that number had dwindled to zero. Not a single person. Not a single Jew on the planet. Not a single person on the planet knew Yahweh. Not one. Nor how to approach him. What things you needed to avoid. I mean, you look at the numbskulls that are using a variation of Yahweh's name, either Black Hebrew Israelites or Hebrew Roots Movement. I mean, they're doing the worst possible thing. They're taking nuggets of Judaism, nuggets of Christianity, blending them all together, giving it a veneer of credibility by using some somewhat appropriate variations of names, and they're printing that out as a new religion. So we have to be really careful. We have to expose them and condemn what they're doing. We have to show Yahweh's righteous indignation is burning and his animosity against them. Yeah, it's been 3,000 years. And even during Daoud's life, it was a horrible insurrection against him. I mean, his predecessor, King Shaul, Saul, tried to kill him. He actually ran to the Philistines to hide. Not his best move, but nonetheless, it's imperfect. He did it. He bailed out of Jerusalem when his son led a revolution against him, a coup. You know, he lost his family. It's true. Well, look at Yahweh. You know, I've been accused. They say, you know, you made a deal with God that he would do the marketing, you wouldn't do the marketing because that marketing was your strength. And now look at you. And I say, what part of our arrangement did you miss? You said that God would protect your family. You don't have a family anymore. Huh? And how could you be that naive and that mean-spirited? I went and did what no one has ever survived. I not only met with Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Islamic Jihad while they had guns to my head. I did to Islam what no one has ever done before. I exposed and condemned the religion using the oldest manuscripts. I set the Quran in chronological order and put it in the context of Muhammad's life using the Hadith. And I received thousands of death threats. Guess what? Yahweh protected me and my family. He honored his part of the deal. He honors it today. And as for my losing my family, no. I divorced my ex, just as Yahweh divorced his. If divorcing your ex for being irascible, possible to be around, is wrong, why did Yahweh do it to his Israel, as it's laid out in Hoshea? You're not going to think that part through. So, well, you know, you don't have a family. You're not conversant with your children. What does Hoshea say? Yahweh say through Hoshea, you are not my children. God hasn't conversed with his children in 2,700 years. If not conversing with your children after you've tried to bring them up is bad, are you going to tell me that Yahweh was wrong? He picked people who have experienced what he's experienced so that they can understand it and share it with you. Besides the fact, what does Barashi say about leaving one's father when you often start your own family? I raised my children till they were in their 30s. Supported them every which way, their education, even their homes and their jobs, you name it. I don't think you could have a more supportive father. It was time for them to be on their own. I have another family I have to care for. And yet these numbskulls are so mean-spirited. They would present this as a reason to betray me and Yahweh and his people. As for the marketing thing, and we'll talk a little bit about this too, because this is what Psalm 89:46 is all about. It is Yahweh saying, I'm disgusted at what you have done to lead people away from me. That marketing thing. You know, when I wrote Prophet of Doom and Tea with Terrorists for the first time, you know, going back now 20 some years ago, I lost track at over 5,000 hours of talk radio interviews. 5,000 hours. You know how much that would cost if you had to arrange it and buy it? First of all, I don't think you even could. It'd be about $5,000 per appearance. All just happened. Yahweh did exactly what he said he was going to do. He arranged for all of that message to be conveyed. He did the marketing. Thank you. Since that time, I've devoted myself to being a bookworm. I translate, I think, I write, and I share. in writing. That's why that bookshelf sits behind me. That's why there are so many books on that shelf. That's why now I can talk to you eye to eye. And all of that time, I didn't do anything related to marketing. And even now, when Yahweh says, okay, enough books already, I want you to talk directly to my people. It's time we talk directly to my people. I'm not doing the marketing. And the people that began the process flubbed it up miserably. They were awful at it. I mean, just horrible. And God's response to me was, trash it. It isn't worth anything. Start over. And even then, you know how competent I am in social media? Well, consider this the sign. It's not the sign of, yes, good. It's the sign of being all thumbs. I don't do it even now. My job is to sit in this chair and to look you in the eye and to convey this truth to you. And it's Yahweh's job to put the team together such that you can hear it. That's what he has promised all along. That is what he's doing even now. But people want to control his message. They want to speak for him. They want a Miriam moment. So God is angry. It would not be until we began to post the Yada Yahweh series initially online that this began to change. Now the books are soon to be branded under Yahweh's brand. That menorah that sits above me is the new brand that he asked for, and was insistent that we change from the lion to the menorah, because the menorah represents him, represents what we are doing together, the illumination that we provide, and the seven mikrei that between Dode and myself, we are fulfilling and have fulfilled and have explained. That is Yahweh's symbol. And it's the symbol of what we are accomplishing together, which is why he asked for it. And this microphone and that camera, they represent the other part of these tools that God wants us to use. And I greatly appreciate you allowing me to come into your home to let me share these things with you, these truths with you, so that you can join us as part of the covenant family. So now as we rebrand, and Yahweh has said, this is going to be the Yahweh blog. I could not have imagined that I would ever use blog and Yahweh's name together, but this is the mechanism that exists to communicate with the world. Okay, I'm an old guy. You don't teach old guys new tricks. So all I can do is just be real with you. You know, our last program, my wife and producer, she hadn't slept. She fell asleep. I don't know how it gets any realer more real than that. You know, I'm having a cup of tea with you today. This is as real as it gets. We turn on the camera. We go for an hour. I share what I've come to know. And then we do it again. And we do it again. Why? Because you're worth it. Because I want to spend eternity with you. But that's the small part of it. It's because Yahweh wants to spend eternity with you. He wants your presence to enrich the covenant. And then against all of this, you would hard to imagine that 1.8 million Haredi parasites are so intellectually incapacitated by the rabbis that they will contender to engender Yahweh's overt antagonism and burning indignation without any hope of future awareness. All the while, they disparage Father and Son by claiming their appalling religion makes them righteous, as they cite one rabbi after another. They cite their Talmud and pretend that it's Torah. These books, which are currently labeled under the Yahweh series, and will, once the dust all settles, we accommodate what Yahweh asked of me 3 months ago, and they're rebranded under that menorah and under Yahweh's name, then they will be so for a reason. It seems more appropriate to please our God. We have a real simple relationship, Yahweh and I. I listen to him and I do as he asks. Works really well. And so as a result of that, we are not antagonizing him. And if you don't want to antagonize him, don't work against us. If you want to please him, work with us. Simple. There are already 1.8 million shrill Jewish voices and another 4 billion Christian and Muslim voices fanning the flames of divine wrath. And now we have former insiders who want to carve up a slice for themselves. 3 millennia is a very long time, a very, very long time, at least by our standards, but perhaps not by God's. Time does not flow for him the way it does for us. Unlike creatures bound on earth, Yahweh, as a spiritual being, determines how he wants to experience time, varying the pace of its flow to suit his needs. He could have made his time with Dode, particularly the early years, seem like eternity. He could make his time with Noach seem like forever. He could look at how long it took me to study his words, translate his words, contemplate his words, write it, put all the pieces together, get the presentation right. Over 23 years, I said, boy, that kid's not very bright, not very smart, slow on the uptake. Or he could say, you know, it's been 3,000 years and no one got it right. And in 23 years together, we've communicated it such that now it's all right. And you might say, that's pretty darn good. And I think that's the way he's looking at it. That's pretty good for 23 years to bring all of this to you. Yeah, it may not be perfect. There may be a revelation that come across here and there that's a little different than something I've shared in the past. This is Dode's song. I'm going to share something in the past that I think I got mostly right, but a little wrong. And that is, when I was reading in the Mizmor, particularly I think it's in the third, which is mentions Absalom in the dedication, that Dode still cares for the son that led the insurrection against him, the son that killed his firstborn child. And so as Dode is contemplating the sacrifice and the pain that he will have to endure fulfilling Pesach and Matzah, I mean, he's seen it. I mean, he knows what Rome is going to do to him and he, this beast, and he knows he's going to have to go to Sheol to carry our guilt. And it's, you know, agonizing what he's volunteering for, and he knows it's the right thing to do. And I thought maybe he's in a position at the point to negotiate with Yahweh and said, I'll do this, but I want a special favor. I'm going to make the ultimate sacrifice. I'm going to do this for us, but I want a favor. I want Absalom because he pined over him. We're not going to see Absalom in Shammai. What Dode did is he didn't get Absalom into Shamaim. That would be way too awkward for everybody. He kept Absalom out of Sheol. And for that alone, Dode was awarded something very precious. Very precious by Yahweh. Very subtle difference between the two, actually, isn't there? But see how profound that difference is? And that also tells us that those folks that think they're going to have Shabuah as their harvest, not so much. You know, Miriam was never included again. Yes, after Yahweh told her to shut up, she did shut up, unlike the hive today. And she was plagued with leprosy. And yeah, 7 days later, while the entire family was immobilized and made no progress during that time, she was let back in. But you're not going to find her in Shamaim. But you probably will find her in Sheol. When she is next mentioned, it's in Devarim, and there's this whole discussion about divorce, separation. And then the conclusion of it is, I want to give you an example. Remember Miriam, whom I plagued. So you have to be careful. The covenant is sort of very much like the Hebrew language, where the imperfect and the perfect have major roles and how God perceives us. You know, for example, every one of the 10 statements that Yah etched in stone that either explain the relationship he is trying to achieve with us or behaviors that he's trying to encourage and discourage, they're written in the imperfect, which means that the moment you stop bearing false witness, you're fine. You're no longer in violation of that statement. But the moment you stop working alongside Yahweh and the implement he's chosen at this time to accomplish his mission on behalf of Yisrael and his people, you don't longer fit within the confines of the imperfect conjugation. Something to think about. And the perfect conjugation is for a limited period of time. And so you could be considered just like Miriam was. She helped author and sing the Song of the Sea. So she was on the inside because that Song of the Sea that she and Moshe belted, it's a beauty. But then she was excommunicated. As a matter of fact, the terms actually include incarceration, which is Sheol. So you can perceive yourself as part of this covenant family and be excluded from it. It's something I did not perceive previously, but it's very real. And God has made it very real to us. So, as I've said, Yahweh can vary his perception of time, but from our perspective, 19 to 20 centuries have crawled past since the Masiach Dode fulfilled Chag Matzah, and they have been horrid, and they are far worse at this moment than ever in human history, and within the next year and a half, it is going to be hell on earth if it isn't already in so many different places. That was funny. I was tweeting on X, and somebody had said, would you deport one of the Muslim progressives in Congress, Omar? And they said, would you deport her and send her to back to Somalia? And I said, no, I'd much rather escort her to Sheol, which is hell. And then I had to go back a moment less. Excuse me for the verbosity. What is the difference between sending her back to Somalia and hell? They're pretty close to being the same, aren't they? Well, fortunately, we have reached the conclusion of this interval. With each word we translate and share, Yahweh becomes less hidden, less unknown to his people. This is our time to make that so. Dode has done with Yahweh all the work to have a productive Shavua harvest. If you're listening and you want to participate, great. But our real work, well, it culminates on Teruah. And it's on behalf of Yehudim. And even this Shavua harvest, it's going to be overwhelmingly Israelites and Yehudim. When Father and Son return, on Yom Kippurim. In fact, just to pause there a moment. I married a Yehud. Even for me, as the observant foreigner, as the one devoting my every waking hour on behalf of God's people, Yisrael and Yehudim, I too had to camp out with a Yisraelite, with a Yehud, to be in total compliance with Yah's directions. That's why he provided Leah for me. This is a really important aspect of who we are and what we're accomplishing at this time. If you are not working on behalf of Yisrael and Yehudim, you are not working for Yahweh. If you think that Shavuah is your harvest, then I'm here to tell you it's not. It was about 6 years ago. Leah and I just celebrated our 7th anniversary together. About 6 years ago, Leah told me, I would not give your books to a fellow Jew. That's pretty tough, right? And rather than be frustrated with her, rather than eating humble pie and say, oh boy, why not? I knew the answer. I had been a Christian. I knew the Christian religion inside out and in between, which is why I could destroy it in Christianity. I was the Moses going back into Mitzrayim for Christianity. But Judaism, oh man, that is a real complex cult. And it comes in more flavors than you can possibly imagine. And they are actually somewhat better liars than are the Jews who created Christianity. But her view was, you use your knowledge of Christianity to demonstrate how Yahweh's testimony is opposed to it, which is important because that's the lie that created Judaism. Without the Christian lie, there is no Judaism. Rabbi Akiva, the father of rabbinic Judaism, created Judaism by foisting a false Messiah to counteract the false Messiah of Christianity. That's the truth. And so you do have to understand that the false nature of the Christian crude counterfeit of David is the reason that God's people don't know Yahweh. They don't know their Messiah and King and Savior. So it wasn't that these things should be eliminated, they're essential. It's that the entire focus of the book had to be Yisrael. That's the mission. God is calling his people home, Yisrael and Yehudim. I stand before you. I stand with you. Because Yahweh is calling you home. And so I spent, 2.5 years on that rewrite, and then several years more, making certain that every aspect of those books were properly positioned for the mission that Yahweh wanted, which was to call his people home. So as I look into this lens of this camera, well, you are welcome as a goyim to capitalize on what we are discussing. You are welcome. You're invited, but you can't participate if you're estranged from Yisrael. And you need to know, my mission is to call God's people home. And if you wish to join Yisrael in their return to the covenant and to the Mikre and to Yahweh and to the Mashiach Dod, you're welcome, but not a part. She was right. When father and son return on Yom Kippurim, the day of reconciliation, in year 6000 Yah, October 2nd, at sunset, 6:22 p.m., in 2033, in Jerusalem. Yes, year 6000 Yah is 2033, as I've shared before. Mamadis got it all screwed up. He got it all screwed up because he looked in the wrong place. He was influenced by Islam. He wrote it in the Sanctification of the Moon chapter. He based it on the number 19, which is the prime number of the Muslims as that relates to their surahs. He just created an ever-loving mess that has no validity whatsoever. And sadly, Jews don't question the rabbis that created their religion that so antagonizes God. Anyway, that's 6,000 Yom, October 2nd, sunset, 6:22 p.m. in Jerusalem. And that's when Father and Son are returning. And it's all over the prophetic text. No one has ever set that date for you until I did so for you. And that's how you back date to get to Shavuot, so that the 7 years of the time of Jacob's troubles. And the Shavuot harvest that is 7 years before the Teruah ingathering happens to be on a Shabbat on May 22nd of 2026. So it is from these things that we're able to explain Yahweh's timeline and how to capitalize upon it. So not surprisingly, all of this is the stated purpose for Yahweh's Chota, this sucker that grows up from the fallen stump, out of the rootstock that was Israel, all the way back to Dovid. This is the purpose of the Nakre, the observant foreigner. This is what Yahweh is accomplishing through the Nesh, the banner that he is raising now, so that you can know the truth. We can expect Yah is God, Elijah, and Yada, he knows, to arrive and let the world know in no uncertain terms just how displeased God is with humankind. And we will be there together again. First of Abib in 2030 is when our arrival will occur. And we will herald the arrival and the return of Father and Son. And now it gets personal, as should it be for all of us. I'm going to share this statement with you, and we're going to conclude this episode of Dovid's Song with these words. You have chosen to remind me, Zakar, to ask about the duration of life in this world and temporary things by contrast to eternity, especially how time flows differently relative to the observer, Ma Cheled. Was it for nothing that you created each of the descendants of Adam? Mizmor, lyrics to sing, Psalm 89:47. You want to ruminate on that? Between now and our next episode of Dovid's Song? How profound that statement is. Excuse me for raising my voice, but I want to get your attention. Was it for nothing that you created man? It is so bad with the religious trash and the lies and the self-aggrandizements. And God, we got this cult now that is Mama God. It is so disgusting what people are trying to do to ignore the truth, to tear down the one who is bringing it to you, to disown what Yahweh accomplished through Dovid, what he is now making apparent for the first time in 3,000 years. So, was it for nothing? Or do you understand the timing of these events? Do you understand that we are just 8.5 years from the Teruah harvest, the sacrifice of the Adamah Parah, the Yom Kippurim homecoming and family reunion, and the opportunities to celebrate Sukkah camping out with God? We are at the end of time, and the next 7 years prior to that will be devastating for God's people. And so this is the only time in all of that time, other than when Dod David explained it as the Gabor El, the most competent and capable man of God, to Daniel, he judges God. Explaining the timing of all of these events so that you could know them, so I could be certain of them, so I could bring your attention to what happened in 33 CE and what will happen in 2033. And if you don't understand this time now, as it relates to Zakhar, remember the man. Zakhar, remember the man. You've chosen to remind me about the man. And the understanding of the duration of time that now exists. And if it weren't for what we are doing now, if it weren't for you listening to this program and acting upon it, becoming one of those who's going to celebrate Yahweh's return to this planet is toast. There'd be no reason for Yahweh to return. There'd be no reason for this special creation called humankind. It would all be over. Please contemplate that between now and the time of our next program so that you know why I am so impassioned about this, why I am so devoted to being available to come into your home and to share these programs with you. I am Yada. My name is Craig Wynn, and I am the voice of Yahweh. I thank you for listening.